any of the feedback that we get. And with that, the first order of business is our July 23rd, 2020 minutes. We can get a motion to accept those, and then we'll go into any corrections or additions that need to happen there, and just identify yourself with who does that.
So moved. Steve Anderson.
Thank you, Steve. Is there a second? Well, I'll second it just so we can get it on here. Any discussion on the minutes? Any corrections? Hearing none. Is there anyone opposed to approving the minutes? Because sometimes that's easier rather than everyone saying, you know, trying to say yes and everything. Speak now. Okay. Hearing none, then the minutes are approved for July 23rd. Our next order of business, number three, is an update on the municipal water coordinators. Brenda, I know you're on. I don't know if Bob Kenny's on as well, but whichever would like to take on that.
Hi, this is Brenda. I know that the regional coordinators have been working on it. They were somewhat sidetracked by Tropical Storm Isaias. So I will reach out to them and make sure that they're following up. And I know Bob's been working on that too.
Okay. Do we have any idea of how many that we're still awaiting for or any particular regions? Do we know? And I know at the last meeting, it was kind of mentioned we are waiting. Two regions were having more difficulty or that is. Do we know any update on those two regions?
I haven't seen an update, but I will. I'll reach out even while we're on the phone and find out what's going on.
Okay. Thank you, Brenda.
And Martin, this is Lori. Good morning. We also had a discussion with Bob Kenny, a good discussion about the work process and sort of getting that process straight versus you know what it is and what it isn't. So that was a good discussion. So we did follow up on that item.
Thank you for that. I know that was one of the items as well, you know, with all of this. So that's helpful. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving on, item four, discussion of changes in conditions since previous meetings and weather outlook. In the agenda packet was sent out the drought conditions summary and the drought triggers spreadsheet. For that, so we'll go through with any additional updates that's needed that's not included in that or any presentations that need to be made. Eric, I know you said there might be a couple presentations, if I recall correctly.
That's right. Nicole Belk, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I think I have you up first, if you would like to start off. So I'm just sharing the PDF that was sent out of everyone's presentation. If you want me to drive, that's fine. Or if you want to take over, you can do that.
Actually, sure, since you have it up, if you want to scroll through as we kind of talk about what's gone on, that would be great.
Sure.
Okay. So, July rain. Oh, go ahead.
Do you want this one up, Nicole, or your presentation?
You know, the slide deck kind of gives the narrative.
Okay.
I can narrate through the slides. So yeah, let's start with that. That'd be great. All right, so here we are with on the left-hand side, the July 2020 rainfall, and on the right-hand side, the departure from normal. The one place I think it was got made out really well during the month was Fairfield County, because the rainfall there was anywhere from normal to over 2 inches above normal, but it thunderstorms, soaking rainfall. So no question, Fairfield County is in really good shape. And you can see Southern Litchfield County got kind of caught into that too, and a bit into New Haven, Middlesex, you know, where the rainfall there was around normal within an inch on either side. But you look further north on the total precipitation graphic for Northern Litchfield County, Harford County, Tallinn-Wyndham, and the eastern portion of New London County, and the rainfall there was substantially less, you know, ranging anywhere from, say, an inch and a half to 3 inches. So that was a pretty decent amount below normal, looking at anywhere from, like, say, 1 to 2.5 or so inches below normal in that those areas. There was a pocket of higher rainfall in the Northeast Mass. I think it was Connecticut, like the Willington area. It's like on the Tallinn-Wyndham County line. They had a good thunderstorm that went through there one day during July and dumped several inches of rain. So that's the nuance there. So go ahead to the next slide. Okay, so what we have here is this is a screen capture of the 1, 2, and 3 month figures for the Connecticut Precip Report for the month of July. What I wanted to point out was obviously for the 1 month figures up at the top, Fairfield was 138% of normal, so that was fabulous. New Haven and Middlesex had 80 to 89% of normal, not too bad. But everybody else was pretty poor. The worst ones are Hartford only had 43% of normal rainfall and New London only 59. So obviously between having two poor months, June and July, we started to hit triggers on the drought plan for precipitation. So the second chart was the 2 months, and highlighted in yellow are the counties where the percent of normal rain triggered the stage 2 incipient drought, which is a 2 month precipitation of less than 65% of normal. The only two counties that didn't trigger this were Fairfield and New Haven. Everybody else hit it. So taking a look at the 3 month figures, for 3 month precipitation less than 65% of normal could trigger the precipitation stage 3 or moderate drought. And I believe it was just the two Litchfield and Hartford counties on that. Oh, and also Middlesex, which I think, yeah, Middlesex County also at 62% of normal also triggered the stage 3 for precipitation. And on the next screen, I think on the next slide, this is going into the heat.
Can you hear me okay? So the heat in July was 3 to 5 degrees above normal across the state, and that made it So what we see on the right, but it was basically an exceptionally hot month, so that kind of exacerbated the dry conditions. Okay, going on to the next screen capture here. Okay, so August month to date rainfall, most of the rain that fell in Connecticut August month to date was last Tuesday with the rains from east to east. So Litchfield County made out the best, where they had 1 to 2 inches of rain, and into Fairfield County as well. It drops off when you get into central Connecticut, both north and south central, 1/2 inch to 1 inch of rainfall, which is below normal. And then the driest area was the southeastern part of the state into New London County. That area had less than 1/2 inch of rain. And you can see on the right-hand graphic, we have the percent. This is the percent of normal map for month to date, where, you know, the Fairfield and Litchfield, not too bad. But then the percent of normal drops off. And for the say the eastern half plus of the state, the rainfall month to date was 25 to 50% of normal. So not looking too well so far. I also want to mention that the temperatures month to date have averaged 3 to 5 degrees above normal as well. So we've had a continuation of the heat we had in July. So I guess the next slide. I think I would defer to Doug because Doug had provided some updated information on the rainfall forecast. Doug, are you on? Okay. Well, I'll just, you know, with the screen capture, but also mention what Doug had indicated. There was the potential for normal or above normal rainfall. A lot of that was pending on whether or not we get a low pressure system that may pass south of us and give us some generous rain, say Sunday night and Monday. Normal for a week in August is around 1 inch of rainfall. The image on the right is, it shows below normal to near normal rain for the next 7 days. Doug was also looking out for a 2 week period, so not just this period. So if that low pressure comes close enough, maybe we'll get some nice rain. We'll see. So there's some uncertainty on the rainfall forecast for sure. And the next slide has the outlook, and this is from the Climate Prediction Center, from the 19th to the 25th. Temperatures averaging above normal and the precipitation odds favoring it below normal. And also just a quick mention on the temperatures for this upcoming week. Temperatures are coming down. They've been sweltering here for a few days, but today's going to be another hot day. But overall temperatures coming down some over the next several days. Normal near the shoreline. With the marine influence and over the northern portion of the state, probably normal to a few degrees above normal. The week 3 to 4 outlook, which goes from August 22nd to September 4th, again, shows some more uncertainty on the rainfall. Not quite sure what way we're going to land with that. But again, temperatures averaging above normal, which it's just been the pervasive pattern that we've been in for so long. Just expecting that to continue. And the final slide is the 3 month outlook for August, September, October. So it does include this month, and we're obviously already trending warm. But for the 3 month on average, it's likely we'll average above normal on the temperatures, again, some uncertainty on the precipitation. And that's the last slide.
Terrific. Thank you. Any questions for Nicole on that? Okay. Terrific. Eric, not sure who was your other presentation.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
I was having trouble unmuting myself. I don't know. I don't see in the attendance list anyone from USGS. Let me double check.
Yeah. Hi, this is Tim Sargent.
Oh, Tim. Thank you for joining.
Sure.
All right. Would you mind going through John's presentation?
Sure.
Okay. Would you can either take over yourself or just have me scroll through.
If you wanted to scroll through,
okay.
I haven't had a chance to talk to John much about it. He's been in the field this week, but I should be able to interpret. I just checked our real-time, the status of our real-time surface water and groundwater wells. Okay, good. That's August 11th. So as you can see, it's still kind of a mixed bag, mostly below normal. This is from Tuesday. Southwest and west in general is closer to normal. As Nicole pointed out, that's where we kind of had the rain in Connecticut. Southeastern part of the state is very dry. Groundwater well, I think on the spreadsheet with the triggers, that did reflect that we did have two out of the last 3 months of below normal conditions. So that is accurate on that sheet. Both June and July were below normal.
Okay.
So if you want to scroll down to, I guess some groundwater will be next. Oh, okay. So this is based on the 31 sites, average of 31 surface water sites. And as you can see, we're trending downward quite sharply. Like I said, not sure what to say about this. It looks like it's fairly self-explanatory.
I think those are just the Huc basins that are showing, you know, what's below normal for the past 7 days ending August 10th.
Yeah. So, yep, that's exactly what I saw. Four of the wells are below normal. And I believe this is from the 11th as well. And six of the wells, as you can see, are still normal.
But I think the trend is downward. And I think
yes.
if the trajectory that it's on continued, I think that by next or the end of month reading and sort of getting toward the end of the month, they'll probably fall below normal.
Agreed. And most of the end of July were below normal, the end of the month readings as well.
So this looks to be the new application that John Mullaney had been working on that would feed out to us the number of consecutive months below normal that each groundwater well station that we have in the state falls below the 25th percentile. So this is actually very useful for us because the plan, the groundwater trigger in the drought plan calls for the number of consecutive months below normal for a certain stage. So this makes analyzing the data a lot easier, this application here. And we can see that for a good number of wells, we're now 2 months below normal. But that's ending July 2020. Once we get to August, we could have a number of wells at three months below normal.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
This is Steve. Too bad John couldn't give us one of these where we could actually zoom in because some of those
right.
look like they're kind of covered up by others. So there's some that look like they're in the 3 month already.
Right. One in the southeast and one in the southwest. I'll talk to John about that.
But it still appears the majority of wells are, you know, 0 months below normal. We're seeing a lot of wells still within their 25th to 75th percentiles. So that's interesting.
And does I have a question on that? Does this represent all of the wells?
I believe it.
I thought we had more. There was more up in the northeast corner, and it seems like a really vacant area there in the northwest.
There may be some issues with data for consecutive months. That's probably one of the drawbacks of this. Is if the data wasn't collected the previous month, you can't really use it in this.
But can't use it. It's not available. Okay. I'm just thinking of like where it's too bad we should start to overlay this with our drinking water supply sources. That's an exercise that DPH will take on because this is good information. This is really very useful for us. Thank you.
Yeah, agreed.
I need to review this with John because I agree. It looks like there are some wells not there.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Sure. The only month we missed due to COVID was March.
So this looks like, Tim, this looks like a chart of summarizing what we're seeing in the map above. In terms of by county, the number of wells we have, the number of wells that have been below normal for two or more consecutive months by county. So that's a nice chart that John just shared.
Can you explain the percent?
So I think that's the percentage of wells that are...
Number of wells versus the number that were below two more consecutive months.
Right.
So if you look at the left and then you move over to the middle column, the percentage is that. Because you see the 6 and the 4 for Wyndham is 66%. That makes sense.
And just to go back a bit, based on the number of wells in this chart, it actually looks like they are all included except, I think that's all of them that are active.
Okay.
It's showing 69. We had 71 wells, but two of them have been compromised in Granby.
Okay, so the counties that have the least representation are Litchfield and New London and Wyndham, but those ones seem to be we have the highest percent of those wells with 2 months below normal. So interesting.
Yeah, that is.
So I'll scroll down. So this is for stream flow, and it looks like John prepared the same analysis here.
Oh, yes. Andy, I would expect that also to worsen at the end of August.
And looks like we have our chart here again. Shows us where we're looking. It looks like the one that stands out is Hartford, followed by Litchfield, as far as regions that are doing the worst. So that looks like it for John's presentation from USGS. And Tim, thank you for filling in for John today. He's out doing field work on the Cape. He had hoped to make it today, but we understand that he wasn't able to do so.
No, he's actually on his way back now. So
okay.
He's en route. Apologize, I didn't have more information to provide. I just haven't had a chance to sit down with John. And
nope, that's okay.
Yeah, those useful maps. I need to get up to speed with John on those as well.
No, that's great. Looking at the next item on the summary report, it's our surface water update from DPH. Would Steve or Lori care to speak to that?
Hey, Eric. Steve is on, coming to you from vacation, so I'll let him talk about the information that we have. So go ahead, Steve, and thank you for being on.
No problem. So it's sort of a mixed bag. The overall percent of normal for all the systems is 96.8. It's sort of the haves and the have-nots. We've got two systems that are below 80%. They're hovering around 75%. That would be Southington Water Department and the Salisbury system for Aquarion. Last time we met, Southington Water Department was in their first drought stage. The last reporting, they said they were out of their drought stage, which doesn't make any sense because they've gone lower, but it's because of the way that they do their stages. It is based on demand versus capacity. I did have a email conversation with them, and they know that, you know, if their capacity continues to drop, that they're going to have to take action. They do have an interconnection with, I believe it's Regional Water. So not a giant concern, but they are asking for mandatory restrictions. So there's about three other systems that are between 80 and 89%. That would be the Greenwich system, which is in their second drought stage, and they're asking for mandatory restrictions. The Waterbury Water Department, which is actually a concern, it's really big. They're, I believe their trigger is based on days of supply remaining. So they currently have a pretty good days of supply remaining, even at, you know, 87% of normal. But they are aware of it. Meriden is the other one. They're at 89%. And there's also based on days of remaining supply. They may want to take a look at what those triggers are and tweak them a little bit to react a little bit quicker. And then there's a bunch of other systems, 12 systems that are in the 90 to 99% of normal. So it's sort of, you know, it's half the systems are below normal and the other half are above normal. So sort of a mixed bag. That's the chart, Eric. So and you'll see up above, because we ranked them by percent of normal with the 74 and then all the way down to 100 or more. So many of the systems are reporting really good numbers. Two systems to watch out for, Bristol Water Department. They just sent in their report and they are approaching their first drought trigger, which is 75% of normal of percent of capacity. So they are right on the edge. So it is very likely that they will hit their first drought stage before the end of the month without any real rain to recharge the water. And South Norwalk is also trending, and they said they're approaching their first drought trigger. They use similar triggers to what Aquarion uses, which is a modeling trigger. So they model what's the percent likelihood they will hit a certain amount of supply. So they're trending towards that as well. And then Manchester had also reported that they were approaching their first drought trigger as well. So there's definitely things to be concerned about based on what's being reported for surface water.
So just in general, I know we list Southing. It's hard to see because it's really small. But Southington Water, Steve, you mm-hmm. say no drought stage. I think you said that they are in a drought stage.
They're not in a drought stage. They were the previous reporting. When we reported in July, they were in their first drought stage. But they base it on demand. So 6-point-something million gallons per average per day for a week. Oh, then they're in their first drought stage. But because their demands went way down to now, I think it's just over 1 million gallons per day. They said, oh, we're not in our drought stage anymore.
Okay, so
I think it's a mistake, but that's what their drought plan calls for.
So just in general, what you heard Steve say, there are some large water systems. You know, Southington serves 40,000 people, Bristol 60,000, Meriden 60,000,
Waterbury,
Manchester 50,000. There are some very large water systems here approaching their first drought stage. Some of them have come to us informally and have said, what is the state doing? If the state actually, it would be helpful if the state said something more than what we've said in the past, because it does help to send that signal at the state level so that they could also, it sort of backs up their messaging. So with these large systems like this approaching these trigger levels, I think it would be help. You know, given what we've seen, though, with, we're always in this yin and yang kind of thing. You know, you see the forecast is coming and, you know, as soon as we step into the next level, you know, we'll get 6 inches of rain. But, you know, it is what it is. I think we are in a dry spell. These utilities probably could utilize, it would be helpful to them if we started to send a signal to say it is dry. People might want to think about conservation measures, even if it's just voluntary. We are concerned with a couple systems, as Steve mentioned. We will be following up with these directly. Waterbury is, you know, some of these, again, have set their triggers, we think, too low, and we will be working with them on that issue. But regardless, we are paying close attention, as you see here, to all of these systems and working with them directly. So are there any questions on any of this? Anyone?
I would make one more comment. So U.S. Sure. Drought Monitor came out this morning with their latest weekly maps, and they have extended D0 all the way down to the coast for most of New Haven County and all of Middlesex and all of New London. And they had also added in a spot of D0 to no change. So, but then they did, based on ECES's rainfall, they had improved a small portion of Litchfield County. The northwestern portion of Litchfield County is now only in D0, where previous week it was D1. So I just wanted to add that as well as a latest update from U.S. Drought Monitor.
And Steve, do we have our map, or maybe we don't?
Yeah, I have it. I could share it. It's on a PowerPoint presentation.
Is it up to date?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, if you could share it, give everyone an understanding of where these systems are.
Eric, I'm going to share my screen for a minute here.
Sounds good, Steve.
Can you see the map?
Yes. Beautiful.
Okay. Yeah. So the blue ones, there's no restrictions. Salisbury is the one up. It says voluntary restrictions, which is the purple. And then you'll have the Southington system, which is asking for mandatory. And then there's, down in the Fairfield County, you'll see where many of the Aquarion systems are. And they're asking for restrictions as well. I do Bristol probably when they hit their trigger, at least by the end of the month, they will most likely have some restrictions as well. So, all right.
So, while we say that, with the state maybe taking a step into our next stage, or at least sending a signal that maybe we're headed in that direction. Not all of our public water systems would be thrilled, as you see the blue areas, right? Water utilities like to sell their water, but that is not what is on our mind, right? But one of the things, Martin, that we just have to be mindful of is if we are going to send a signal out at the state level, our utilities would, like to get a heads up ahead of time. So that's one thing that we have done, because some of our utilities here in blue would send out their own press release. So that's something to think about there. That caused some confusion. Anyone who had been on this the last time and been through this before, people started to get confused, because somebody like MDC, for instance, as soon as Governor Malloy would send out, hey, we're in this stage, MDC would say, hey, we're fine. We got plenty of water. Use it all you want. So we might want to think about a message to our water systems about consistency, because it just sends giving people an inconsistent message is not a good idea. So something we should consider, and how we should message this to our water systems. So I'd welcome any thoughts on that.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, Laurie. That's a good point.
Thank you. Steve, anything further?
No, I think we've covered it.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Okay. Eric, was that all the presentation pieces, or is there anything else?
I think we have an update from agriculture. I don't know to what extent, anyone wants to comment on this. Let me share it again. It's just continuing through the PDF that I had sent out prior to the meeting. Hang on one second. So here's an update from Steve Anderson at Department of Agriculture with updates on Palmer Drought Severity Index, Crop Moisture Index, Topsoil Moisture Mapping, Veggie Dry, as well as the drought monitor. So Steve had prepared all this. I think the numbers sort of speak to themselves. We have them sort of in a grid by county on the Excel spreadsheet that I had sent out in terms of where we stand for each county compared to our drought triggers. But the trends here are that we continue to get drier. I think we've sort of known that, with the exception of perhaps Fairfield County. Fairfield County has not been trending drier. It's been actually trending wetter. But the rest of the state, particularly eastern Connecticut, this is broken into climate sections. So there's only three climate divisions in Connecticut. Our northwest, which is essentially with Litchfield County on its own. Our central, which is everything away from the immediate coastline and then the coast.
Okay. Great.
Steve, if you're on, did you want to talk to anything else on this?
Sure. I think the important ones are down towards the end there, kind of paints the whole picture. Those last couple of slides, I mean, they were kind of shows last week versus this week. I mean, if you look at the veg dry one there, and you look at August 2nd versus August 9th, and you look at the southeast corner of the state, you know, I think that's why we're seeing the drought monitor. You know, these are all kind of coming from the same area, and they're showing more parts of the state with going into pre-drought conditions. And then if you go to the last one, the last slide there is the drought monitor. I didn't have the August 11th. And again, you know, more of the state going into the D1 through D4 spot. And I think what's important on the one that just came up, the August, I think it's August 11th that Steve was talking about earlier. You know, last week it was 23% of our land area with essentially not abnormally dry or in moderate drought. And this week it's actually less. It's 12.8%. So in some ways, you know, it may have gotten a little better in some spots, but it also got worse in that respect. So like you said, Eric, the trends continue to be on the dry side. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Yep.
Anyone else have any additional updates that they need to do?
Eric, this is Helene from Forestby. I just wanted to make a comment. You know, when I provided the updates the other day, we were trending at fire danger is moderate in western Connecticut and high in eastern Connecticut, and that still holds true. You know, we've gotten these sporadic rain showers or thunderstorms that aren't doing much from that perspective to change our fire danger level. And probably within 3 or 4 days, if we don't get significant rain, we'll go to high in the west and very high in the east. So we've seen an uptick of fires, but mostly in eastern Connecticut. And honestly, I was just going to say, you know, now they're starting to have a lot of ground fire in them, which makes them very difficult and stubborn. And we're just lucky that we have not had any wind accompanying. You know, we haven't had very windy days on any of the days that we've had fire, so that's sort of been a saving grace. I think if we start having some wind associated with this, we're going to see a lot more issues with fire in the state in the upcoming weeks. End the report.
Thanks, Helene. How many fires have we seen over the past couple of weeks? Do you have numbers?
I don't have, unfortunately, our collecting is sporadic and delayed. So I don't have a real accurate number. The major amount of the increase has been on eastern Connecticut, and I can speak to at least probably 8 fires that I know of. We responded to four or five of them from deep. And usually, you know, we don't respond until somebody calls us in because it's prolonged, heading into more than one operational period, or it's a difficult fire. So the fire that we have in Far East Connecticut in Thompson, which actually started well over, it's been a couple weeks now, that is still smoldering. That is not out. You know, we're continuing to monitor that. That's not going to go out until we get a significant wetting rain. You know, so we're going to start to see more of that type activity. We actually put a bulldozer line around that fire because we knew that we weren't going to be able to put it out because of the lack of rain. And they just haven't received enough rain to put that fire out yet. So it is smoldering, does have some hot spots.
Hi, this is Lori. Could you repeat the location of that fire?
Sure. Thompson, Connecticut?
Thompson.
Yeah, we've actually had a couple of fires in Thompson. A lot of them are really on the far east, Brooklyn, Sterling, Thompson. That's where we've been having the most activity recently. Not to say that it's not in other areas. We're just not getting called to them or they haven't been reported in yet.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Terrific. Anyone else? Okay, then with that, we're going to move on to item five, which is review of the state drought plan, recommended course of action. Again, we do have the stage two trigger document that is attached to there, page 22 of the drought plan. If you've gone over our defining criteria, that if we have, you know, met all the criteria and everything there, we do have our recommended mitigation actions, some which have been talked about regarding, you know, conservation and other items here. Thank you, Eric, for putting that up. Discussion on next steps, where we are at, and on where we are here with our stage two trigger monitor, which is up on the screen for you to see. I'm having difficulty on one of my monitors. I can't see it, so we're...
And difficult for some to see because a lot there, but I did send it out by email to the group. So if you can't see it on the shared screen, you can always open it up on your own with Excel.
Okay.
But this table had originally been prepared by Bruce Witchen prior to our August's 6th meeting, which was canceled, and it was updated yesterday prior to sending out with some of the indicators got updated based on the latest available information, which I have on the column L there. But basically, you could see that we're basically all over the place in terms of what our indicators are telling us. And Bruce, are you on? Do you want to speak to your thoughts first in terms of where we stand here?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. I've been having issues. I was on with my through Teams as well, but lost that connection a while ago. So I don't know what you're looking at now, and I can't actually see it myself because I'm busy here trying to get my computer reconnected.
Okay. It's the Excel spreadsheet?
Yep.
The trigger
yeah,
document.
So I don't have it. Mm-hmm. I don't have it up in front of me, so I can't really speak to it. I can definitely say that as of last week, I was surprised when I originally compiled it because I was expecting it to look much worse than it actually did. However, I took the liberty of creating a new category instead of having it be a binary look, you know, either we're at the trigger or not. I created some wiggle room in the middle where I figured these are the places for the group to exercise its judgment. And when I did that, there was a lot of room for judgment that the group could go, could choose to go pretty much either way in quite a number of counties. I'm more familiar with that chart, last week's chart, because I was the one who did it, so I remember it much better. I looked at Eric's, but I can't really speak to it right now. Eric, you probably should speak to that one rather than me.
There's really little has changed other than I think, you know, our crop moisture has continued to plummet. Palmer drought index has gone down. Veggie dry has gone down for some of the counties. Fire danger is high for some counties as opposed to where it was before. So basically our triggers or our drought criteria in the drought plan that are the most short term we have, which are basically what I just listed. And even our U.S. drought monitor has increased the drought in portions of the state. Our short-term indicators are falling rapidly. It's our long-term indicators, our precipitation, groundwater stream flow, reservoir status. Those are the ones that are taking a while to catch up. And I think that we're seeing, particularly in eastern Connecticut right now, a repeat of where we were back in June with a flash drought occurring, with extremely hot conditions resulting in increased evapotranspiration rates. Whatever little bit of rain has fallen is quickly evaporated, doesn't have a chance to get into the ground. So we're seeing bare bones, bare dry soil right down through the top layers. We're seeing stress on agriculture, fire ponds drying up, increased fire danger, as Helene noted, with fires popping up, particularly in the eastern part of the state. So, it's interesting that, when our plan was revised back in 2016 and 2017, we really did not account for how to handle this type of flash drought situation that we've seen now twice this summer. Because it's difficult to really kind of ring the alarm bell when the majority of people who may be on public water supplies with adequate storage really don't have anything to worry about. It's certain groups, it's certain parts of the states. It's very individualized. I'd like to just open up the discussion on that and really kind of where folks think we should go.
Well, hi, this is Lori.
Thank you. I was going to say, identify yourself, please.
Hi, Martin. Yes.
Thanks, Lori.
Sorry about that. Yeah. So just looking at this chart, right? So it's a mix. It's a total mix, as you mentioned. And I think that one thing comes to mind for the future. I think it's time to invest some money in hiring a consultant to help us think this through. Because I think what we're seeing here is unlike what we've ever experienced in the past. To Eric's point, I think we need some outside expertise to come help us think through these metrics. We've relied upon our history, our expertise, ourselves for decades. But we've never really had the expertise of someone to come in from the outside who understands what's happening with climate change. I think that's what we're seeing here. I think we're seeing a lot of interesting impacts, and we just can't – what we've set up here is not – probably not the right way to look at it at this point in time. And I almost want to take – Bruce has said this in the past, take reservoirs off this. It shouldn't be a primary indicator. Because it does give you a false sense of security, I think. Because you sort of lump it all together and it's a trend. And you're based upon 30, 40, 50 years of history for reservoirs. And
hey, what's up?
Hey, Pete, could you mute yourself? You know, one thing that I think reservoirs do, it's very reliant upon history. And I don't think that history we can all 100% rely upon anymore, given climate change. So that's my thought, though, that's long-term. I think we do need to think about getting some outside assistance to take a look at where we are, what we've done. We've come so far, but I think we have a long way to go with these metrics. I think at this moment in time, I think we might want to hold tight where we are, the position where we're in, but meet again. We should probably meet week to week. That's my thought. That's just my general thought at this point.
Thank you, Lori. I know we are scheduled for meetings every other week, and because we missed last week, our next scheduled meeting happens to be next Thursday. But other thoughts on this?
This is Corinne. Does it make any sense to, I think it makes sense to hold, but I'm wondering if it makes sense to issue some sort of press release to say that we're still paying attention and it's a very mixed bag and we're going to continue to review this on a regular basis or something like that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know people's thoughts on it, because part of, you know, public outreach and everything is actually one of the stage two items on there. Not to say we can't be proactive and say that we are continuing to monitor and everything, but I think we have to be careful, just if we're following our plan, that we don't step on our own toes and start doing the things that are stage two recommendation mitigation actions when we haven't declared it that level yet.
And this is Lori. I would agree with that. I would love to get a message out, but I think people would, you know, so what are we telling people that they, I think people out there would expect us to be paying attention, right? So if we sent that message out, they'd be like, sure, aren't you? That's your job, right? And I think people have had enough, right? I know I've had enough, right? So, I just want to know, tell me what to do at this point, you know, as we continue to hear that. Just tell me what to do. I'm sort of sick of all the stuff we're dealing with between, you know, the high wind event we had and all the issues we've gone through in the last week with the storm. And now this, you know, just tell me what to do. If there's a drought, there's a drought. Tell me what to do. And that's what our water systems are looking for. And we're going to be working with them more carefully. But I think we meeting week to week, I think definitely getting a message up, you know, Martin, through to the leaderships. You know, I have to update my commissioner, but certainly, you know, getting a note of what we're doing, how carefully we're watching things. And I think we're doing great with the metrics. It's amazing the information that we just went through in a short period of time. And getting all the experts together. So I think telling leadership that this is what we're doing, we continue to do this, and we probably should pay close attention week to week, and then go from there. You know, no surprises. Like, no one wants any surprises. That's the issue we're dealing with here. I don't think we're going to get surprised, but I don't know. Anyway, just my thoughts.
Yeah. No, thank you, Lori, on that. And I don't have a problem following up when we let the administration of the governor's office, you know, that we were in a stage one and watching it and giving them, here's our update of what's going on. I think that's a appropriate measure to take. I think the other thing that really has to be done and really concentrated and done is the municipal water coordinator. You go into stage two, they play a viable role in getting this information out and everything. And without them, we're kind of, you know, fighting our nerves off our own face, because we just can't, you know, do the mitigation actions without these people in place.
Hi, this is Bruce speaking up again. Both, I guess, a combination comment about the water coordinators, but also the thought of meeting weekly. Meeting weekly is diverting however many people are on this call from whatever else they would be doing. And, you know, just to be kind of flippant about it,
if we each took an hour, hour and a half that we're spending on this meeting and used it calling up town CEOs, we might be making it, you know, might be advancing on this water coordinator thing. Not that I'm advocating to do that. My recommendation, though, is that we continue to meet the every other week kind of schedule we talked about. But if each agency that has data sees anything striking in their data, to please send it to the group and say, hey, I think we need to meet. Or even if it's not in your own particular data, everybody should feel free to say, hey, waiting 2 weeks, that's too long. I think we're ready to declare something now. And I would recommend we do that rather than lock ourselves into weekly meetings.
And as an another alternative, you know, we can compile any updates that we receive on a weekly basis, update that chart in the Excel spread, that Excel chart that we were just looking at, and send that out. And as on a weekly basis, and as folks think that it's time to meet, then we schedule a meeting. But that's another possibility too.
I'm okay with that, as long as we're paying attention to that chart and sharing it. I'm fine with that. I don't need another meeting, absolutely, on my calendar, but I just find it good to talk through, given what I think we're heading into here.
Yeah.
Right.
I just wanted to, another point that I wanted to sort of show here, and I pulled up, I'm sharing my screen now for those who can see. I'm sharing what is page 10 of the state drought plan, which really kind of provides the overview of what each stage, you know, taking all the indicators and the drought triggers away, what do the stages mean? As in, you know, boiling it down to the public, what can you expect when we're in a particular stage, right? So up on the screen is the definition of stage two, which we've called incipient drought or emerging drought event, which it says, stage two represents, I'll just read it out loud so just in case folks can't see the screen. It's pretty brief. Stage two represents an emerging drought event potentially impacting water supplies, agriculture, or natural ecosystems. Impacts from a stage two drought are typically limited or isolated in nature, and are likely to be felt first in the most water-constrained settings. At stage two, government officials and public water suppliers in affected areas should be engaged in preparing to undertake mitigation activities should they become necessary. Data collection and reporting activities are increased where appropriate, and communication and coordination becomes a priority. Stage two is the first publicly announced stage of drought. So I just wanted to share that because from a public perspective, you know, taking the science out of it for a second, and what the plan, the guidelines of the plan in terms of the criteria, but looking at it from where are we really in terms of what people are experiencing, do we meet that or do we not? And you know, because one of the big changes that this plan sort of advocates for over and over throughout the document is the use of professional judgment over the data. When the data isn't really pointing to the conclusion that you think it should be, do we have professional judgment as a group to sort of take action when we think it's appropriate? More food for thought, but it's fun to reiterate that.
Eric, this is Laura again. Just a quick thought. I'm glad you brought up, you know, just reading that paragraph under stage two, reading it carefully. You could say that we might be there at this point.
Hey, right. Eric. This is Nicole. Can you hear me?
Hey, Nicole. Yeah.
Yeah, so I just wanted in this discussion to bring our attention back to the crop moisture index with respect to how quickly some of the indices deteriorated, but not all of them. So the crop moisture index is based off of abnormal evapotranspiration deficit. So it takes into account both the temperatures and the precipitation that occurs and the computed soil moisture. So if you think about how hot we've been, how July was, it was one of the top hottest July's on record, or the top, and this month so far has been, we've had very, very warm temperatures again, with low precipitation in, say, the eastern two-thirds of the state. I think the crop moisture is kind of giving a red flag that things are quickly deteriorating from, you know, the topsoil and probably, like, the way how plants are going to respond. But then the water supply is lagging behind. So I think this is something that's happening quickly. The heat is exacerbating it. But, you know, on the contrast, some of the water, you know, groundwater and stream flow and the reservoirs are taking a little bit lag. But the soil moisture is taking a big hit. And then you're seeing the fire danger up as well. So it's just kind of food for thought there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. This is Steve. And one of the other sort of new technology out there is EDI, which is Evaporative Demand Drought Index, which actually does not take precipitation into account, and it measures how thirsty the atmosphere is. And it's on the Northeast Dew's website now. They just added it, Eric. So it has a bunch of different criteria, but it's very likely that temperature is the driving force on how thirsty the air is right now, and there's not enough moisture on the ground in order to quench that thirst. Eric, I have the one that's up for the Northeast Dews if you would like me to share my screen.
Yeah, please do, Steve.
So this is, hopefully you can see it, this is the Northeast Dews website. So nedews.nrcc.cornell.edu. So this is compared to historical measurements. And so this is compared to a 1 week EDI in August. And you'll see that, and they correspond with the USDM, you know, D0, D1, D2, but this is evaporative demand, D0, D0, you know, all the way up to D4. And then you start looking in a two-week period, and it's, you know, it's indicating we're very dry conditions. And they did some testing of this, and they modeled it against, you know, previous droughts and found that it was actually better at indicating conditions and how, you know, what the drought is compared to what the U.S. Drought Monitor has. So I would suggest that we start using this as an indicator. We learn a little bit more about it. We can go to their website and learn more, but it's indicating significantly dry over the last 2 weeks, over the last 3 weeks, you know, and then over, you know, the last month in northern counties and a little bit of the northern portions of the southern counties. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Thanks a bunch, Steve.
Okay. Other thoughts people have?
Yeah, hi, this is Pete Aristed from Fisheries, and I had to step away for a minute. I might have missed this. I was just curious to know where our neighboring states are at. I imagine we're in a similar situation. So I didn't know what Rhode Island, Mass in particular, and maybe New York were doing with respect to the drought situation.
Yeah. Eric or Bruce, do you have an update on that?
Hi, everybody.
Um, I, I was just going to say, we have our we have a guest from Massachusetts on right now, Vandana Rao. I'm sorry, did I get that right, Vandana?
Yes, you did. Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here, and it was very interesting to hear your conversations. Good morning, everybody. I am from the Executive Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs in Massachusetts, and chair the Drought Management Task Force here for Massachusetts, and lead sort of the drought effort in terms of coordination among state agencies and a response. So we had our task force meeting yesterday, and similar to what you're seeing in Connecticut, I think the higher temperatures that we're experiencing here has really driven a lot of the dry conditions, especially for crop moisture index and fire danger. And the fact that we did not really get much from ICS is has really impacted the southeast region of Massachusetts. So yesterday at our task force meeting, after a lot of deliberation, the task force basically has recommended a level 2 drought for the entire state. I believe in Connecticut, it's only when you're in a level 2 drought that it becomes a drought declaration. For us, we have a level 1 that is also considered as a mild drought and is a declared drought in Massachusetts. So this has taken us to sort of stage 2 out of 4 stages. So we're just, you know, this is going up, this recommendation is going up to the secretary of my office, FEEA. And likely a press release will be coming out later today to make that declaration. So we're, you know, a lot of what we do at stage 2 is really sort of coordinating, similar to Connecticut, keeping a closer watch on the data, but also being a lot more aggressive in outreach and education and reaching out to municipal officials across the Commonwealth in terms of really strongly restricting their outdoor watering, and it being August and summer, and the fact that most people are at home because of COVID, I think in general we're seeing water use going up, and we really want to strongly message to folks to bring that down, and having brown lawns is okay, and you know, messages such as those. So that's where we are at. So in the next day or so, I think we'll have a more formal declaration from our office. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions on that?
Okay. Hi, this is just a quick question. Thank you for being on. It's great to have you here. Are there any particular water supplies that are of concern? I know the Quabbin is obviously a significant resource for Boston. Mm-hmm. Is that one of the concerns that is driving this?
Water supply actually is not as much of a concern as yet. The Quabbin is doing really well. It's, as you know, it's a huge reservoir that has 5 to 6 years worth of storage. So, you know, that particular system is doing great. Many of the other systems, both on the reservoir side as well as you know, we have many public water supply systems that rely on groundwater, are doing okay. I think there are a couple of systems in the southeast region in Massachusetts that may be starting to experience some of those types of, you know, sort of lack of enough water type of conditions, but we haven't quite reached that point. And our point of comparison right now is the 2016 drought, which was a fairly significant drought, and certainly water supplies as well as the farming sector is doing a lot better this year than back in 2016.
Okay, so that would be the...
Thank you.
Sure.
I appreciate that. It's interesting how you look at water systems versus how we look at water systems in our state. So, appreciate that.
It feels like you have a lot more private water supplies and a lot more larger systems than we do here.
We do. We have way too many. they're municipal. A lot of them are municipal based, you know, town based.
Right.
You know, individual, they're connected maybe, but they have their own sources around right. their city areas, and absolutely. You're much more interconnected and share that big reservoir, but
right. Okay. But we have a lot of discrete systems, and through our Water Management Act, which is our regulatory program. There are, especially if a community has a permit, there are a lot of conditions that are attached to it, and some of them are drought related or flow related or some kind of, you know, water quantity threshold related. So we are able to get them to automatically hold back once those thresholds are hit. So there is some level of I guess, way of them curtailing based on what the availability is. But I hear you in terms of us trying to get the message out. There's always a conflicting message. The state or the region is at one level, the local community, maybe their water suppliers are doing well, but we would like to see consistent messaging everywhere about water use, even if a water supply in particular may be doing okay.
Great, terrific. Thank you.
And feel free, if any of you have any questions, feel free to email me. I can leave my email address in the chat window.
Just thank you, Vandana. Just continuing along with Pete's question here, I'm just looking at the chat window, and Britt Westergaard from NWS Albany is on and shared New York's drought declaration status, which I just took a look at, and it looks like New York's three northern drought regions, which mm-hmm. are basically the Adirondacks, Great Lakes area, are in a drought watch. The southern regions, oh, and Long Island's in a drought watch mm-hmm. as well, most of Long Island. The southern regions, basically bordering Pennsylvania, are not, they're in normal conditions, and I'm assuming they got significant rain from Tropical Storm Isaias. As far as Rhode Island, their drought committee is meeting for the first time, I believe, this summer, the first time today at 11 o'clock. So in 45 minutes, Rhode Island will be meeting, so we'll be hearing what they decide to do later on.
Great. Thanks, Eric. Other questions? We have a meeting scheduled for next week, next Thursday, the 20th, which is our one that was scheduled. So we can leave that meeting as is and meet next week and check status. I'm not hearing any major input to elevate to level two as of today, from what I'm hearing. I can definitely get a message out to the governor's office, just letting him know, giving him an update on where we are from when I provided them back in June when we went to stage one, and just giving them an update of where we're at there, and then take next actions at our, you know, next meeting on the 20th and see where we're at, if that sounds like a plan for everybody.
Martin, that works for me. This is Lori. Thank you.
And Martin, just to sort of formalize our course of action here, perhaps we could ask each agency to actually either speak to or put in the chat box their opinion as to holding with stage one or going to stage two for any number of regions, just so we have that on the record for each agency.
So, Eric, for DPH, sure. Yep. I agree. I concur for DPH.
Okay. Thank you. Department of Agriculture.
What are we asking? Whether we...
We're asking for agency opinions on... Sorry, I'm getting significant feedback.
Significant feedback.
I think it's someone's microphone. Maria from Pura, did you just join? Could you mute yourself?
I just unmute. Good morning. This is Maria from Pura. I just unmute myself because I like you to know that there are no changes as of right now. Aquarian is still in stage two and no more changes. We have a meeting tomorrow, so I will see if they go to more restrictions or they leave those restrictions the way as they are. So now I will mute myself to listen to you.
Okay, thanks so much, Maria. Steve Anderson from Agriculture. What we're doing is just collecting agency opinions on what action to take, whether to remain status quo at stage one or to advance for any number of regions to stage two, just kind of just so we can have it formalized for our minutes. Any opinions on that for each agency on the IDW? So
I'd say, go ahead, Steve. You know, given that we're going to meet again next week, I'm fine with putting it off. But if the group wants to move up to the other stage, just based on the dryness in the soil and the top 6 inches of the soil, I mean, as Nicole was pointing out about crop moisture, I'm certainly raising that flag isn't a bad idea either, you know. But I'm not looking to jump to it, and pull everybody else in that direction either. So kind of in the middle there.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
Okay. What else we need? Deep.
Hey, this is Pete.
Corinne, I would ask,
yeah, Corinne should speak to this as she's filling in for Doug.
Yes, I'm here. I think given that we're meeting next week, I'd agree to stay at this stage, but I'm getting concerned, and I think if things don't change, we're going to need to move up. I also think we should be getting some information out there, even if we just post to the website to say that, the indicators are very mixed and to get a little bit more information out there.
Okay. Thanks, Corinne. Emergency management, Homeland Security. I know Brenda had to jump off, but.
Martin and Eric, it's Bob Kenny. I've been on for about the last 50 minutes. I missed about the first 10 minutes of the meeting. So I'm pretty confident in saying that based on what the subject matter experts on this call are reporting, the fact that we have a meeting next week that we hold presently and reevaluate. I'm not a subject matter expert in drought per se, but I do think that the right people are sitting at the table here to make that decision. And from what I'm determining, what I'm hearing is let's hold and then reevaluate next week. And I just would like to also comment that the five Demis regional offices continue to work aggressively to collect the water coordinator list. Like Steve from DPH, I'm actually on vacation, but I will get that information, a current number, to this group as soon as I get back. We are diligently working it. Region 4, as reported, has had a delay, but that's underway. And then Region 3, we had a little bit of a communications issue, but the Capital Region is in the process of collecting that data as well. So, and Region 5 continues to push it. Region 1 is done. Region 2 is down to the last town. So we should be in a pretty good position to communicate out to those water coordinators information and share information with them. In addition, I just remind you that the emergency management offices have daily communications with the chief elected officials and the EMDs. And right now, it is just about every day. So I encourage you that if you have any information that we need to reach CEOs, that the regional offices can push those messages and can even follow up with appropriate phone calls as necessary if it comes to that. So that's that's all I have to say, unless anybody has any questions.
Great, thank you. So overall, it looks like we will stay where we are at. We will meet on the 20th for that and continue our review and see if we have a change at that time. One other thing I just wanted to note is that we did have discussion on that infographic that we were discussed at our last meeting, and I don't know where we are at with that and the possibilities of getting that up on our website as well, just showing where our, you know, our changes and everything else. I know there were a couple little tweaks that we had talked about at the last meeting, but I didn't know if there was any update on that at all.
Yeah, and this is Eric. Thanks, Corinne, for bringing it up in the chat. I was working with Ali on this. We had some suggested changes from the last time we met, and Ali's been doing a great job of coming up with some graphics as well as some, you know, mappable graphics that we could show in the event that we had different messaging for different parts of the state, that we could break that down. So she's been doing great work, and I think I owe her a response on that. So I'll get back to her and to Corinne's point and getting more information on the website regarding where we stand right now. And definitely support that, and perhaps Allie's graphics will be an integral component of that. So I'll get back to Ali today on that.
Great. Thank you very much. Does anyone else have anything they want to that we need to discuss? Okay, hearing not, then we will do item number 7, which is adjourn. We can get a motion to adjourn it.
Motion to adjourn from Lori Matthews.
Thank you, Lori. Is there a second? Thank you.
I'll second, Corinne.
Terrific. And hearing no opposition, we will adjourn our meeting and get information out for our meeting next week on the 20th. Thank you all very much. Greatly appreciate all your help and support with all of this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Yeah.